Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change and distance yourself from some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, and we're going to actually attend to the news in the second hour of our program today, as we have a repeat guest, IQ Al-Rasuli, and so we will spend our second hour focused not only on the emerging news from the world of Islam today, but also the nature of that religion, so that you might understand not only it better, but might also understand how it's going to influence our world over the next 20 years. So during our first hour today, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a real relationship with God. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said today, is 877-300-7645. If you're a real sport and happen to be a Muslim and would like to challenge IQ Al-Rasuli in the second hour of our program, that would indeed be fun. We're going to begin where we ended the program yesterday, talking about a passage that I think has profound insights for today. It is given to us as advice. It is scribed as advice from our Heavenly Father to his covenant children. It is from a Marsal, which means a word picture, which we call Proverbs today, 29:18. This describes what's wrong with our world today. God said, without revelation, people take charge and they run wild. But he is happy, he is benefited, he is upright on the correct path, who observes and focuses upon the Torah. There are lots of insights here. The realization is that man has run amok. I mean, there is almost nothing that we do institutionally that can be considered beneficial. And look at the economic foibles of the world. It's just how bad things have become in this regard. You know, countries engaging in economic pedophilia, so to the tune of, the United States, nearly $17 trillion. An epidemic in Europe as well, with people being so bankrupt morally that they indulge themselves, knowing full well that they're pushing the burden of and the cost of their personal indulgences off on their children. And it's morally bankrupt. It's the antithesis of what God envisioned. God envisions parents lifting up their children, not putting them down, not burying them under a mountain of debt. Look at our militaries. Now, we've killed over 100 million people in the last 100 years. For what? Why do we continue to wage war? Why is the United States, which claims to be a godly country, the most militant country on earth? Why do we make bad situations worse with our invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq? Why is the world engaged in a proxy war in Syria where there are no answers? There is literally no way to resolve the situation. A horrible situation will continue to get much, much worse, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. People run wild when they are without revelation. Look at the religions of the world and the horrible cost of these religions. You know, I think that for the better part of 1,000 years, the most oppressive regime in all the globe was the Roman Catholic Church. Now it's Islam. Deadly, menacing, destructive. Without revelation, without communication from God, without being able to see and perceive and understand, people take charge and they run wild. What's the antidote for that? Well, the Torah, according to Yahweh. And what about the Torah? Is it doing what the Torah says? No, that's not what he says. Is it obeying what the Torah says? No, not what he says either, because he didn't even have a word for obey. Not a single word in Hebrew conveys the concept of obey. And for those of you who don't know what Torah means, it does not mean law. Paul was wrong when he called Torah law. It isn't law. It's teaching, guidance, direction, instruction. So what does God say? If you want to be on a correct path, to walk upright, not hunched over, God doesn't want you bowing down to him. If you want to be happy, if you want your life to be enriched, if you want your experiences to be joyful, then observe the Torah. Shamar is the verb. Shamar means to closely examine and carefully consider. When you do, your steps will be guided. Your path will be correct. You won't run amok. God would go on to say, blessed and happy, walking in the straight path, enjoying the favorable outcome that awaits, is the individual who does not walk in the plans and schemes of the wicked, who violate the standard. This is the nature of Hebrew poetry, if you will. God says the same thing from many different perspectives. He is telling us, reinforcing this concept that is the introduction to his covenant. The first thing God asks of Abram is to walk away from his country, to disassociate himself from his father's home. That's what he asks of all of us. And the country wasn't any ordinary country. It was Babylon. Babylon is the birthplace of religion and politics, of militarism and of economic schemes. God has a lot to say about the place that he had Abraham walk away from. And it's all condemning. He explains the menace, the poison of religion, what it does to people, and why he hates it, just as he does with politics and their economic schemes and their military maneuvers. God hates everything that Babylon represents, religion, politics, militarism. And he asks us to walk away from it. Here he is saying that if you want to be happy, if you want good fortune, if you want a favorable outcome, then don't walk in the plans and schemes of these wicked individuals who are ignorant of the Torah. He would go on to say, in the way of these sinners, those who have missed the way, as chata is the Hebrew word, speaks of missing the way. So in the way of sinners who have missed that path, he does not stand. In the assembly of those who arrogantly mock, those who boast and interpret and show no respect, this is for God and his Torah, he does not stay. So there's a lot of insights here as well. You know, we are called to walk away from political and religious institutions, from their propaganda, from patriotism. But God does not say that we can't walk into a place like this. It just says we can't stay. He doesn't say that that we can't be part of a, you know, you go to a football game, for example, and they play the national anthem or something, and, you know, everybody's got to stand and remove their hats, put their hand over their hearts. You know, if I were you, I'd go to the concession stand when that's occurring. Don't stand for that. Don't just sit through a church service where their verbiage mocks the very God that they claim they serve. Don't hang with them. Don't be influenced by them. Don't walk with them. Walk away from them. To the contrary, Yahweh says, instead, in the Torah of Yahweh, an individual finds enjoyment and pleasure. And regarding the Torah, he speaks thoughtfully and purposefully in the daytime and at night. We've said on this program, and we'll continue to say it because it is what God says, the only antidote for being beguiled by religion and politics, the only antidote for Christianity, for Islam, for socialist secular humanism, for atheism, for agnosticism, for Hinduism, Buddhism, for being a zealot politically, Republican or Democrat. The antidote for these beguiling human institutions is the Torah. If you find pleasure and enjoyment in the Torah of Yahweh, if you thoughtfully and purposefully consider the Torah of Yahweh and speak about it, then you will not be poisoned. You will not be influenced by the human institutions that run amok, that run wild, that are misguided and misled. What God is telling us here is two things. One is that the Torah is something that should bring us pleasure and enjoyment. Does me. I find it enjoyable to study. Because the entire Bereshith, which is in the beginning, Genesis account, is so incredibly amazing in terms of its scope, in terms of its accuracy, in terms of the fact that in that opening chapter, God tells us three stories, all woven into one. It's the story of how and when he created the universe, even why he created the universe. It's the story of our ultimate redemption, and it's the story of human history played out over 7,000 years. And he specifically tells us to use relativity to assess these days that he's speaking of, and we find that from the perspective, using relativity, of the Creator at the time and place of creation, six what we would call days here on Earth are almost 16 billion years. There is no disconnect between a 16 billion year old universe and a 6 days of creation. Not when you view the creation account being told from the perspective of the Creator himself. It is an amazing story that tells us exactly what God was going to do and when he would do it. But more important, in Bereshit, we are presented with a covenant, which is God's primary focus. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We were speaking of God's perspective on his Torah. The first thing that God says in this particular fatherly advice, because this is from now a Mizmor psalm or song regarding his Torah. The first thing he is saying here is something that is so disingenuous, so from at least the religious perspective. It's so incompatible with Pauline doctrine. You see, Paul's entire perspective on the Torah was that the Torah was a cruel taskmaster, that the Torah was harsh and that it enslaved, and that there was no hope to be found in the Torah. So, you know, God changed his mind regarding the Torah, according to Paul, and he came up with this this really easy approach called the faith in the gospel of grace. That was Paul's line, if you want to believe him. But God's view of the Torah is quite different than that. God says, I want you to find enjoyment and pleasure in the Torah. You know, if you find enjoyment and pleasure in the Torah, then you got it. Then you're headed in the right direction. Now, would you find enjoyment and pleasure in lots of austere and harsh rules that have to be obeyed? Or do you think you're more likely to find enjoyment and pleasure if the document that you're being referred to provides teaching and guidance and instruction on things that are pertinent, things that that if you learn, if you come to appreciate, if you accept, will bring you great satisfaction, success. Then it's not a very difficult question, is it? So from God's perspective, his Torah is the antithesis of how it's perceived in Pauline Christianity. It's a source of pleasure, of enjoyment. And that is because we were created, humankind, with a nesama, a conscience that enables us to exercise good judgment. And that aspect of our brains, that aspect of our makeup, is designed to find pleasure and enjoyment in learning, in coming to know more than we do. That's why man wanted to go to the moon, to just experience what it would be like to be there. That's why man sends probes to Mars. That's why we build telescopes that look out into the sky. That's why we build microscopes that look into the substance of creation. That's why we conduct scientific experiments, because we want to know. We have it's an inbred aspect, a designed attribute that would be an essential component of what makes us unique. This desire to know, the pleasure and enjoyment that comes from learning, from knowing, from discovery. That's why ships set sail upon the sea. That's why great expeditions have been launched. That's why we write books in hopes that folks will read them. It's because it's enjoyable and pleasurable to learn. And the greatest source of learning, the most useful document in the universe, the most valuable source of answers, is the Torah, when it's observed, when it's examined and considered. So God said, it is a source of great joy and pleasure. And those who come to view the Torah this way, as Dode did, I mean, the longest explanation of how we should observe the Torah is written in the 119th Psalm. And it's 176 verses long. It's comprised of 8 verses for each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And it's not just that it follows the pattern of these letters in the order that the letters appear alphabetically in Hebrew, but each of these letters was drawn to convey something important. Each of the letters conveyed an aspect of God's either plan or nature that he wanted to communicate to us. And so it takes each of these letters as the focusing on what these letters actually represent. And it goes through and says, in this order, in this structure, I want to teach you how to observe my Torah. This is Dode, whose name means love. We've corrupted it to David. Wrote these 176 lyrics to the Torah specifically to tell us how to observe it, what was important to focus on in the Torah. By the way, it's not a single rule is mentioned. God doesn't say anything about what you should and shouldn't eat. Doesn't say anything about any rule. The things to focus on are big picture issues. It's the covenant. It's the terms and conditions of that covenant. It's the means to exercise good judgment so that we think and we come to understand how God went about reconciling our relationship. It's prescriptions for living that cut us into that relationship that Dode tells us we should focus on in this Torah. And that indeed is enjoyable. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. We're considering here the first Mizmor. This is the second statement in the first Mizmor. God has told us that individuals who are properly guided, those individuals whose walk is to him, find his Torah, his teaching, his source of guidance, enjoyable and pleasurable. They don't find it restraining. They don't find it confining. In fact, I happen to be admittedly at the far extreme of observation and enjoyment and pleasure as it relates to the Torah. In fact, if I get criticism from those who know Yah, it's typically on this particular subject where I'm one who finds everything that is presented in the Torah to be enjoyable and pleasurable. I am not a someone who finds that I am ordered to obey lots of rules. In fact, I focus very little on the rules in the Torah, because I think that even they are there simply to help us come to know Yahweh and enjoy a relationship with Him. So my view of the Torah, while not as clear, while not as profound, while not as deep as Dode, the man who we call David's, as it's presented in the 119th Psalm, it mirrors his nonetheless. I view the Torah the way he did, that the Torah is something first to be observed, and that means to look at it, to focus on it, to consider what it has to say, to examine it closely. And that second, once you do that, that the opportunity then is to come to understand it. And you come to understand it by making connections, by thinking, by using good judgment. That's in the Psalm that God gave us. That's pleasurable to me. That I find is fun. And so I find myself able to enjoy the process of studying the Torah because I make connections and come to understand it. The next aspect, according to Dode, is to come to respect, to revere, if you will, its author and the teaching that he is providing. And that is how it strikes me. It strikes me as that God's a really good guy, that he's fun to be around, that he loves to party, he loves to camp out, he loves to have fun. That God's the opposite of the God that's created in religions, that wants to be feared, that wants to be worshipped. No, he's just really swell, fun-loving. So I like him. Love him. And the next thing you find is that the deal that he is offering us, this covenant relationship that he's offering us with its terms and conditions and his benefits, is wonderful. God's not asking very much from us. Now, don't corrupt his home by bringing religious and political garbage in. Leave that outside. Walk away from that stuff if you're going to walk with me. I don't want, you know, all this human muck brought into my home. You know, walk along the path that I have suggested so that I can perfect you. Choose to trust and rely on me. Pay special attention to the terms and conditions of my covenant so that you understand it, embrace it. And that's what Dode tells us to do next. You know, once you come to respect the author of the Torah and what he's offering, is act upon it. Engage in it. Embrace those terms and conditions. To share them with you. And then, based upon on all of that, you go to this point where it all makes sense to you. Well, you don't know it all. You know, it's going to take 1,000 lifetimes to learn everything that God has to teach us. But you can come to understand what's important. And when you do it precisely what this passage says. Regarding the Torah teaching, the instruction, the guidance, and direction, the person who finds enjoyment and pleasure in it speaks thoughtfully and purposefully in the daytime and at night. That's what you do. It naturally flows out of you. You want to share it. Now, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing here, too, is that while you're interested in sharing it, you're only interested in sharing it with those who are open to listening to it. You know, if somebody is genuinely open, wants to know who God is, what he's offering, what we can do to engage in a relationship with him, what that relationship is like. If somebody is genuinely open, which means that they are willing to either question their religion or walk away from it, or they're not religious, then it is the great fun in life is to share what we've come to understand. So this statement, as do so many in Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, resonates with me. God doesn't just tell us the good, the way that we can engage in life so as to be blessed by him. He also tells us the consequence of turning away from him. This now from Mizmor number 2. Why are the Gentiles, goyim here in Hebrew, goyim really means people from different races and places. So why, for what purpose, are people from different races and places, the Gentiles? Now, keep in mind that the church is comprised mostly of Gentiles. Christianity is mostly comprised of Gentiles. As a matter of fact, when the church was first created, it went to war against Jews, which would be Yehudim, and Yisrael would be the opposite of Gentiles. So why are the Gentiles and the nations, the cultural, religious, and political associations of man, in actual rebellion, speaking passionately about vain, worthless, and delusional fantasies? Why do earthly rulers and those who govern establish themselves in positions of authority, while at the same time joining together to conspire to rebel against Yahweh and against the one he set apart to serve? Fascinating question. We'll consider that question in a moment. We have Jossie on the line calling in from Ohio. He's curious as to why people have lost their perspective of Yah.
Good morning, Yada. This hit just right at home today. I had a friend who's down on their luck, and they were talking about having to basically guard what the instructions were, and they honed in on a Sabbath, and they said there's no proof that the actual seventh day was when it was. And geez, why can't we just focus more on love and then outward things? And it got me to thinking that back in 2011, for about a six-month stint, I was on really hard times financially with my work. And this is before I knew Yah. I knew the connection between he and his son, the true connection. And I would say to myself, I just have to have faith in God. Yeah. And now I realize that faith meant really nothing because I didn't know him. And I think what happens is people forget that how delightful the Torah is. And when things aren't going good, it's easy to blame Yah and lose perspective of the Torah. And I just hope people don't do that once they really learn who he is.
Yeah, let me speak to the first point that you raised. How do we know that the seventh day is the seventh day? Open up your calendar. And where do you find Saturday on your calendar? There's 7 days of the week, right? That's kind of interesting that God spoke of the first week being 7 days long. And there's still 7 days in the week in virtually every culture around the world. Where do you find Saturday on your calendar, Jossie? Is it the first day of the week or is it the last day of the week?
It shows it to be the last.
Yeah, it does. Where does it show Sunday?
It always shows it to be the first.
There you go. So we do have a historical confirmation. There's not a lot of things that every civilization on Earth seems to agree with. But the fact that we have a calendar that has 7 days and that Sunday is the first day and that Saturday is the seventh day does seem to resonate, doesn't it? Now, does God call his Sabbath Saturday? No. Why does he not call his Sabbath Saturday? Because Saturday is based upon the Latin for Saturn, because Saturn was one of the Roman gods. But doesn't change the fact that the day that we now refer to as Saturday is the seventh day of the week. Now, one of the things that most people lose sight of, and particularly it's usually Christians that say, you know, any day of the week is just as good as if they were God, and as if he did not etch the first of his seven instructions in stone, speaking of the importance of the seventh day and setting it apart. What they don't seem to recognize is that the eyewitness accounts of what occurred in 33 CE with Yahusha actually affirms that the Shabbat was what we would refer to as today's Saturday, because what we have there is a progression of events that has Bukurim occurring on the first day of the week. And so they know that the first day of the week is what we call La Sunday, which would make the seventh day Saturday. And what we find is that in the eyewitness accounts, and based directly upon what Daniel predicted would occur, on a Monday, Yosha came into Jerusalem, just as the Passover lamb has to come into the home 4 days before is sacrificed. Then on a Thursday evening, he told his disciples, I want to celebrate the Passover dinner with you. And the reason that a Hebrew day begins at sunset and ends at sunset is because that was the only way that Yosha could eat and enjoy the Passover meal with his disciples and still serve as the Passover lamb on the same day. So he had Passover dinner. Christians have corrupted this to the Last Supper. There is no Last Supper. He was eating Passover, and they now have corrupted it to communion and to the Eucharist, and yet every comment that Yahusha made about that meal was remembering him as the Passover lamb. And so he was able on Thursday evening to celebrate Pesach Passover with his disciples. On Friday, then, during the day, he was the Passover lamb, which was still the same day Passover. And then it was, we were told, that nothing could be done relative to him because it was now the Shabbat, the Sabbath, the seventh day of the week, which is where he experienced his separation from God. And we will return to Shattering Myths, and we'll talk about this timeline in a moment. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host and tour guide, Yada. We're on the phone with Josie, who is calling in from Josie's calling in from Ohio, and she began with a Christian who made the statement, and I've received 100 emails on this, is that we don't know that that the seventh day is Saturday. So you know why are you so fixated on observing the Shabbat on Saturday? And by the way, Shabbat is begins on Friday. Today is Friday as we do this show at sundown, and we'll continue through sunset on what we call Saturday, the seventh day of the week. And what I was doing is I was walking Jossie through the testimony that exists in the from the eyewitness accounts, which proves that this is that kind of a statement is just a blatant ignorance on behalf of Christians. Because they know what the first day of the week is. That's the reason why they have their worship services on the first day of the week. They know that, in fact, they even call it Maundy Thursday. They know that it was Thursday evening that Yosha ate the Passover meal, that he became the Passover lamb on Friday, which was still Passover. And they knew that because the eyewitness accounts talk about the fact that they had to hurry to take the body and to put it into the empty tomb. Because of the fact that the next day, which was going to start at sundown, and that at sundown would be the beginning of the Sabbath. And that's the day where Yosha's soul went into Sheol to ransom us from our own sins, to purify our souls. And they know that then, in fact, using the terminology of the Greek, it was on the first day of the week before sunrise that Yosha fulfilled Bokodom, where his soul was released from Sheol and reunited with the spirit in complete celebration of first fruits, or Bokodom. And they know that was the first day of the week. And since it says that was the first day of the week, which we now call Sunday, they worship on Sunday, and they therefore know by deduction that the previous day was Saturday, the seventh day of the week. So that excuse is mindless, Jossie, and I know that you know that. It's just that Christians ought to know that as well. That what it says is, I'm unwilling to think in that regard. As it relates to being uplifted by the Torah, we have God's promise on that. God says that those who focus on his Torah, those who observe his Torah, find the process to be enjoyable and pleasurable. And if if you are down in the dumps because life has been cruel, I mean, there are, you know, there are so many aspects of life that are hard. I mean, life is not easy. And if that is your plight, then the single most beneficial thing you can do, according to God, is to find enjoyment and pleasure in the Torah by thoughtfully and purposefully not only speaking about it, but observing it. And so if you do so, and I have not yet found anyone who has taken it upon themselves, this opportunity, this invitation of God, to closely examine his Torah, you know, to translate the words, to think about the tenses and the moods and the stems and the etymological history of the words that God has chosen, to really closely examine the words that Yah uses to write his Torah. I've not heard of anyone who has done that, who has spent time studying his Torah in that way, who has not been uplifted and found great joy and pleasure.
And Yada, that's true, because before I knew anything about Yah and about the Sabbath, I just knew it was Sunday, it meant nothing to me inside me. And now that I have found this gift that he has given us, I actually get willies on Friday knowing that this is going to be the time that I devote to him and for my own rest. And it really has completely changed my life.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things that that God gives you as a series of instructions. And he says, you know, here's some guidance. If you do this kind of stuff, you got 6 days of the week. Do whatever you want to do on those 6 days of the week. There, you know, that's your time to focus on yourself and your family and your personal needs. But I want you to set one day apart. I want it to be the seventh day because seven means so much to me. Because seven, from Yah's perspective, is man, which was created on the sixth day. God, who is one, coming together for the promise of total perfection and happiness. But I want you to set this one day apart. Spend it with me. And when we do that, what we find is that he honors all of his promises. If he tells us that there is benefit in setting the seventh day apart and spending it with him, you will find benefit 100% of the time. Thank you for calling, Jossie. We'll be back after the break with IQ Al Rasuli.
Hi, everyone. I'm Pharmacist Ben, nutritional pharmacist and host of The Bright Side. The good news about nutrition and health. The good news that if you or someone you care about is on a prescription drug or has some kind of health